Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 25 from Canto 7, Chapter 7. Budher Jagranam Svapna Sushuptir Iti Vrittayaha Tani Taye Naiva Nubhoyante So Jaksha Purushakpara Budhir Jagranam Svapnaha Susuptir Iti Vrittayaha Taye Naiva Nubhoyante So Jaksha Purushakpara Bodhe of the intelligence. Jagranam, the waking or active state of the gross senses. Svapnaha, dreaming, the activity of the senses without the gross body. Susuptihi, deep sleep or cessation of all activities. Parentheses, so, although the living entity is the seer. Iti, thus, vrittayaha, the various transactions. Taha, they, yena, by whom, eva, indeed, anubhoyante, are perceived, saha, that, adyakshaha, overseer, who is different from the activities, purushaha, the enjoyer, paraha, transcendental. Translation. Intelligence can be perceived in three states of activity, wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. The person who perceives these three is to be considered the original master, the ruler, the supreme personality of Godhead. So it sounds like you can become God, right? Sounds like? What's this doing in the Bhagavatam? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Without intelligence, one cannot understand the dire activities of the senses, nor can he understand dreaming or the cessation of all gross and subtle activities. The seer and controller is the supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme soul, who, by whose direction the individual soul can understand when he is awake, when he is sleeping, and when he is completely in trance. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Lord says, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mastak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The living entities are completely absorbed in the three states of wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep through their intelligence. this intelligence is supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who accompanies the individual soul as a friend. Srila Madhvacharya says that the living entity is sometimes described as sattva buddhi when his intelligence acts directly to perceive pains and pleasures above activities. There is a dreaming state in which understanding comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, is the Supreme Controller, and under his direction, the living entities are sub-controllers. One must understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead with one's intelligence. It's very clear, right? There's a lot in here. There's a lot. Any one of these, like, pieces that are here, it's a whole exposition or at least a whole class, if not a whole book. It's very involved. Several things just to, like, lay a little foundation. Implied within how Prabhupada has taken these three states of consciousness, jagranam, swapna, and susuptir, it's pursuant to, or the way that he's, the language that he's used in the word for word, it's following or pursuant to the whole detachment message that Prahlad is passing on to his classmates. You know, the Sankhya philosophy message is we belong to the category of spirit, not the category of matter. And the category of matter is both gross and subtle. So that means, look carefully at the word for word, there's the gross sense, there's the body, you know, like here's a hand, or here's an eye. But there's a subtle sense indicated by, you can replace the body part, and then the power of seeing is restored, because the power of seeing works through the body, but behind the body is the power. I'll say it again in a different way. Same thing. There's five knowledge-acquiring senses. That's not the body part. It's a power. Like, let's say, the power of locomotion. We have legs, but supposing your legs are cut. Is it possible to move? Well, you get another apparatus and you can move because there's the power of locomotion. You understand the distinction I'm making? There's a gross body and there's a subtle power, these five knowledge-acquiring, five working senses. It's not the body. There is a body. And the body is moved by those. It's a distinction between the body parts and the subtle power of knowledge acquiring and working. And embedded within this verse is intelligence is operating in both. Through it appears that there's intelligence. It's like a robot. If Sataputta was giving this class, it would be fantastic. Robotics. They can make a machine. But what's behind the machine? There's a machine operator. Robots don't move on their own. You have to have a an intelligent, conscious being that can move the machine. Like, you know, when the soul leaves the body, the machine doesn't move. And then there's different states of what Prahlad is indicating is different states of intelligence. Now, sometimes it's three states of consciousness: awake, sleep, deep sleep. Here specifically is intelligence, and intelligence is operating the power to move, and then the legs move. And so there, in between, there's a mind. This is like saying the mind, there's a thought. I'd like some water. So there's a thought. Before there's an action, there's a subtle action. And then intelligence is needed to transfer the thought into action. And then, so there's the senses. And then the senses activate the gross sense. The hand moves, and it's an apparatus. It's a machine. And there's different parts to the machine. It's Sankhya. It's analysis. It's what's being promoted by Prahlad. And as earlier classes we discussed, the end objective is not just, you know, sorting out the technology of how the machine works. That's for engineers or physicians or people that make their living by building body parts and know how to do it, how the machine works. The goal is bhakti. So here's the Sanskrit. Buddhair. Buddhi becomes Buddhair because it's possessive of intelligence. So then there's different categories of intelligence. There's the first one. Commonly we say wakefulness. Prabhupada has put it, the waking or active state of the gross senses. So that's the body. There's the gross senses and there's the power of sense. Intelligence drives the machine. Swapna, dreaming. Parentheses, the activity of the senses without the gross body. That means there's subtle senses, so you're asleep. The gross body isn't moving. It's lying. Usually. It's lying down. Usually. You're in an airplane, you're sitting up. So, lying down. The body's not moving. But the mind is moving. Because the intelligence is active. And in the, on the subtle plane, not the gross senses. So it's just another level of intelligence. So the intelligence is moving that one according to impressions within the mind. And impressions within the mind, we've heard this, that you can't dream of something you haven't experienced. The example given, Prabhupada gives. Suppose you, in your dream you see a golden mountain. There's no such thing. Mount Meru, other than Mount Meru. So, you've seen gold and you've seen a mountain, you synthesize them together or splice them together and you get a golden mountain. You can't dream of something you haven't experienced because it's just drawing from impressions in the mind. And what does the drawing? Well, intelligence. And there's something behind intelligence. That's where the train is going. That's where the logic of what Prahlad is presenting is all about. And it's right in the verse. One who can understand, so then the third is susupti. So awakefulness, sleep, and then susupti, deep sleep, or cessation of all activities. It means gross and subtle. If anyone has had anesthesia, you'll know you don't remember anything. There's no dreaming. There's a whole other thing that happens. You know, the passage of time. You don't experience passage of time in a dream. You experience subtle passage of time. I've shared this before. Maybe you've had this discussion with Pritra Shava after he had his surgery. Because I had the discussion. When you're older, there's certain procedures you're supposed to do to make sure you don't have like a big problem. So that's my experience with anesthesia. And what they do is at a certain point, there's IV, and then they release the fluid at a certain point. They tell you to count backwards. Then they know audibly 10, 9, 8, and you're gone. The anesthesia has kicked in. You just left wakefulness and you went into susupti. Bye-bye. And then they can take you into the procedure room or the surgery room. So I remember that the last time this happened, and I woke up and I thought, when are they going to take me in? And then I looked at the clock and, whatever it was, an hour had passed, an hour 40, whatever it was, 50 minutes, something. And I was puzzled. It's not like the experience when you go to sleep and you wake up. With susupti, the experience of time is altogether different. So I shared this with Pritra Shava, and he said, same thing. When he had his thing with his throat, took however long it took. And then because he had swallowed some blood when he became conscious, he started coughing, so they gave him some more. He was out for quite a while, half a day or something like that. And same experience, he looked at the clock and he was surprised. It's like there's no sense of passage of time. Because not only the body is inactive, the mind is inactive. It's another state of consciousness. It's really pulled back. And then Prabhupada puts in parentheses, although the living entity is the seer. Cessation of all activities, parentheses, although the living entity is the seer. You don't see anything. Why? Intelligence is a particular kind that you don't see anything, although you're the seer. You're the conscious self. Without the help of the other two kinds of intelligence, you don't see anything. And so, this is a very nice example, scientific example of, what's the phrase used in science? The mind-body experience. Mind affects matter, and matter affects mind. You do this and you experience that. You do that and you experience this. Because in the mind, for example, during sleep, you could experience something that's fearful and you perspire and you may cry. And the other way around, you could experience joy and laugh and you wake up laughing. Because, although it's just in the mind, the body becomes affected. And then the purpose of this again is it's Sankhya, it's to then understand intelligence. So these three states you can describe in terms of the gross senses, you can describe in terms of the subtle senses, but driving it is intelligence. So three states of intelligence. Now where does that intelligence come from? The person who perceives these three is to be considered the original master. The ruler, the supreme personality of Godhead. In the verse is adhyaksha, the last line. Adhyaksha. What does adhyaksha mean? Adhyaksha. The overseer. similar to the language used in 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita about the Supersoul, Upadrashta and Anumanta. Upadrashta, he's the overseer. Same English translation, Adhyaksha, to see. Mayadhyakshena Prakriti, another phrase in Bhagavad Gita. Who is in charge of Prakriti? Krishna. Adhyaksha. Krishna oversees it. And his overseeing it is not, it's pretty powerful seeing. When he sees, he controls. Just by seeing. He has very powerful seeing. That's a whole explanation. Another half an hour discussion on the power of Krishna's senses. But just by his seeing, he's controlling. And Anumanta. Anumanta means he permits. He doesn't even have to nod his head. He just, his icha. He gives permission. And then Prakriti does her thing. And Prakriti doing her thing causes stuff. It causes states of consciousness, for example. The different kinds of intelligence. Then that's referred to in this purport 15:15. Matakshmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna is situated within the heart and from him comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So he's the supplier of the intelligence that drives the machine. He's the driver behind the driver. Behind the machine. It's fascinating, huh? Fascinating. Now, Purusha Para, Para Purusha, he's the supreme enjoyer. And the living entity that thinks I'm the enjoyer, he's the Pondraka. Purusha, Pondraka, this fellow that pretended, put himself forward as he's Vasudev. So he pasted on two extra arms and held symbols of Vishnu in his forearms. He sent a messenger to Krishna saying, "You stop telling other people that you're Vasudev or I'll come and kill you." Krishna laughed and said, I'll save you the trouble. I'll come and kill you. He came with his Sudarshan Chakra, cut off his two pasted arms, and then he cut off his head and Pondraka. So we're the imitation Purusha, and Krishna is the real Purusha. Three things in summary points and conclude. This is the section of Prahlad's instructions to his classmates. These are just, 6-year-old kids. How are they going to understand all this? If consciousness is refined, then these things can be understood. At least it's laying the platform for it. That from knowledge, detachment. Now with that detachment, it can be the material kind of detachment. As Rupa Goswami teaches, Omukshu bi prityago vairagyam phalgo katyate hari sambandha vastuna. If there are things that are sambandha in relation to hari, and you negate them, you reject them, you're detached. You just give up things. Give up the world. Negation. It's false renunciation. because those things aren't yours to give up. It's Hari's things, the personality of Godhead's things. But if you recognize the personality of Godhead's things and you engage in service to the personality of Godhead using those things according to suitability, is another nice part of Rupa Goswami's teachings, then this is a different kind of renunciation. It's yukta vairagya. Yukta, engaged, means engaging or activity.
That's what we do.
Then the last line of the purport: one must understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his intelligence. Well, we're supposed to understand the Personality of Godhead by bhakti. I'm going to read. Some of you are familiar, and I'm not going to do like a whole other class on this, because it's just going to take a few minutes, kind of quick summary. But Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 35, later you might want to read this, where Shukadeva Goswami is saying, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being, along with the individual soul, same as what Prahlad is saying. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. You're familiar with this fascinating verse? It's worth reading, you know, every year or two, going back and reading, because the perspective that Prabhupada is presenting in this 3.5-page purport, it's awesome. It's amazing. It's the Bhagavatam, just the same as over here. Here's Prahlad, you know, a pure devotee of the Lord speaking Sankhya philosophy. It's not that they were being encouraged to be jnanis. We're encouraged to be bhaktas. But bhaktas also take help of their intelligence to serve Krishna. We discriminate. And even in the matter of discriminating who we are, we take help of the intelligence. In the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada emphasizes the bhakti principle, and then he goes to the Sankhya part. It's nice. The general argument of the common man is that since the Lord is not visible to our eyes, how can one either surrender unto him or render transcendental loving service unto him? To such a common man, here is a practical suggestion by Shukadeva Goswami as to how one can perceive the Supreme Lord, just as Prabhupada ended this purport, with healthy intelligence. By reason and perception. We did this the other day. There are three primary means of acquiring knowledge: sense perception, reason and logic, and shabda. And we go with shabda. But here, the shabda is encouraging that we use reason and logic. We do all the time anyway. Actually, the Lord is not perceivable by our present materialized senses, but when he is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude, ta-da, there's a revelation by the Lord's mercy, and such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. Remember once a reporter asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, have you seen God? Have you ever been asked that question? I've been asked that question. Have you seen God? It was common, in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, you know, have you seen God? So Prabhupada's reply to the reporter was, would you believe me if I told you? The porter didn't know how to answer that, so he said, yes. So Prabhupada said, not only I have seen God, but I'm seeing him all the time. Now, do you believe me? Pretty cool, huh? Now, what does that mean? You know, one way it could mean is what it says right here. It could mean other things, and it could mean other things. Such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. He can perceive that intelligence is the form direction of the Paramatma plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. Form direction. Nice phrase. Form hyphen direction. That's intelligence. So, quickly, again, I invite you to read this and study it more thoroughly, because I'm not going to drill on it this morning. Prabhupada makes a suggestion, a sequential suggestion, as to how, by taking help of the intelligence, you can perceive the presence of Supersoul. Are you ready? He starts with, by taking help of the intelligence, first step, I exist. You know, existentialists aren't sure of that, whether they exist or not. But a devotee, by recognizing through acts of perception, I am perceiving, and there's objects that I'm perceiving. There's, you know, stuff out there, and then there's the gross body. I perceive my hand. I perceive, you know, the itch on my leg and or whatever it is. I can perceive things and sensations of those things. So I exist as the perceiver. I'm taking help from my intelligence to do this. I exist as the perceiver, and then there's the perceived. I'm not this body. That's step number one. Then the ability to see, or the ability to move about, the working senses, knowledge acquiring senses. The ability to do that is not independent. I can lose my power of locomotion. My leg get chopped. Then, intelligence may supply a wheelchair or, a prosthesis or something. So, but that takes intelligence. So, my acts of perceiving and working are not independent. It's dependent upon configurations of gross and subtle matter. I'm the perceiver. I'm not an independent entity. I'm taking help through the material energy. Then next, it's nomenclature perhaps, but the perceiver part, that's the spirit part, and then that which is perceived, that's the matter part. So I belong to the spirit category, the perceiver and the actor. Then next is, Prabhupada mentions, there's a dissatisfaction with our material condition. At least honest people will acknowledge, I'm not satisfied. That's because we're spirit, and we're looking for satisfaction in the realm of matter, and it's not going to satisfy spirit. Like, the fish out of water example. Then he goes on. It gets a little more subtle. Now we come to the point that the things which are seen by a little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user or director of the intelligence. Intelligence permits me to see these things, but there must that it is also an instrument to be used by someone. In short, that someone is Krishna, the super soul. Upadrashta Anamanta. He's the seer, and he's the permitter. That's, you know, for both what we see and the ability to see. Our power of locomotion or our other working senses, and the sense itself. It's all under his control. He's the supplier of that intelligence that permits us any one of these three states of consciousness. And one who understands that does so through the power of Supersoul, and thus one can understand this, it's the Supersoul. And I'm the dependent seer or the dependent mover or whatever. The last point is in Canto 3, there's very elaborate description by Lord Brahma about the process of creation, because he puts it together. He certainly knows how it goes together. And at a certain point, the machine is there, and those two things. The machine is there, and the demigods are there, but the demigods approach Lord Vishnu and say, "Help! We can't do our work unless, you know, you participate with us, because we don't have the power, we don't have the intelligence. Please give us the power, please give us the intelligence." So he says, okay. So even the controllers of matter are dependent upon the Supreme Lord. What to speak of us? We're not the controllers of matter. We're controlled. Then there's this whole long section, finally, where before the living entity can see, the Lord sees, and that gives the power to the living entity to see because the Lord sees. We're dependent seers. And then all of the other functions of all the other senses, because the Lord hears, then the living entity is invested with the power to hear. We're dependent entities. Our perceiving and acting is entirely dependent. And therefore, it's not that we can become Krishna, we can become Krishna conscious. And our process is not the jnana process, our process is the bhakti process, but this bhakti process, somehow Sankhya keeps making its way into the bhakti process. The discernment capacity of the intelligence is empowered by our process of devotional service. That's Balaram. What does Balaram do? He gives us strength, spiritual strength, so that we can understand Krishna. And if Balaram doesn't give us the spiritual strength, we're not going to understand Krishna. We need devotional service, spiritually powered by Lord Balaram. It's right within our Maha Mantra. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, for us, we don't have to be big gyanis, we just have to be offenseless chanters. And all of this becomes revealed. And if you don't practice avoiding the 10 offenses, all of this is at best theoretical. And it's not meant to just remain theoretical, it's meant to come to the position of practical application in devotional service to Krishna. The time we spend chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day, it's so precious. It's the most important part of our life. Most important part of our day and most important part of our life. It gives the cleansing and the power, the access to awaken our devotion, and through the means of the medium of devotion, Krishna sees the devotion just as this purport in 2.235. Krishna will then see, oh, he really wants me. Then he helps and he reveals himself. He gives revelation, the verse says. That's the process we rely upon. But in that, even with that revelation, look at all this Sankhya stuff. Now we're guided so we don't go, you know, in a wrong direction. Very enthusiastically and devotionally head in the wrong direction. We head in the right direction because of this proper guidance. Isn't our process so nice? So nice. So meager and poorly qualified, and we're getting all this very valuable understanding by the agency of Madhvacharya and so forth. Let me just mention this Madhvacharya sentence. Just standing alone is far out. Srila Madhvacharya says that the living entity is sometimes described as sattva-buddhi when his intelligence acts directly to perceive pains and pleasures above activities. What does that mean? Well, sattva-buddhi is not shuddha sattva-buddhi. It's just, you know, when you're in the mode of goodness, Krishna supplies a intelligence in the mode of goodness, sattva-buddhi. And in sattva-buddhi, you can be distinct. You could perceive pleasures and pains distinct from the activity. You can also perceive yourself different from the pains and pleasures and the activity. I'm sure you've had, at Brahmacharya, you've had this experience. It's been a warm summer, at least, you know, part of the summer has been quite warm. So you're out on Harinam and it's really hot. You can be really absorbed in, oh, it's really hot, I'm perspiring. And it's somehow, if instead you just get absorbed in the holy name, you're just absorbed in the holy name. Whether it's hot or not hot. You know, whatever the bodily condition and the pains and pleasures are, if you're absorbed in Krishna, it doesn't mean you become oblivious. But just rise above. So the bodily activity, mental activity, intellectual activity, the activity of the soul. Ours is to direct activity of the soul and consciousness to Krishna. And then the tolerance factor becomes quite easy. I was specifically appreciating whenever I visited, yesterday we had this little memorial for Sankirtan and Mother Kalini, Sankirtan Prabhu. For both of them, we heard that little description of the very first time when he's still a bhakta. They're on Harinam in Shanghai and 200 people want to grab the book from his hand. He remained peaceful because he was very fixed in the purpose of his service. So he just figured out, Krishna gave him the intelligence how to get the book to the person that was to get the book and then other people and so on. It's the same for Tamal Krishnamurti. How do you handle when there's 200 people crowded around and, you know, in a place where you're illegal? Krishna gave him intelligence what to do. And Mother Kalini, you know, lady wearing white because her husband had taken sannyas, and you know, with an older person's body. Before, you know, the brahmacharis here are getting up in the morning, she was getting up in the morning in the freezing, biting cold of the winter in Gitanagari, going to milk the cows. Every day, and every night, and every day, and every night, and every day, and she just, she, you can rise above the pains and pleasures, to my point, if you're fixed in devotion. It wasn't just, oh, I've got to go do a service. When we're in that mentality, then activity becomes drudgery. But if you forget bhakti, if you get the purpose behind, you know, realization goes out the window. Everything that you read in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam just like disappears, and you're all about, it's all about yourself. What I, my happiness and distress, and I like this and I don't like that, and so forth. The purpose is lost, the goal is lost, it happens. And fixed sthitadhi, it's a term used in Bhagavad Gita, intelligence that's fixed, that's possible through bhakti. I had this little argument with an Ayurvedic doctor. He was using sthitadhi kind of casually. I let him have it. Come on. This is through bhakti. Krishna gives it. You can't, you know, don't do this, please. You know, through Ayurveda you can become sthitadhi. Forget it. Krishna gives that intelligence. Then it's possible. Then you can, all these things you can see and understand. And the starting point is how you chant the holy name. That's the root. That's our access to understanding these things properly. Then our great acharyas are giving us this wonderful literature so we can be properly guided and understand things clearly and properly under their guidance. Both. Any discussion? Here comes the microphone.
Thank you, Maharaj. I have a couple of questions if you have the time, but I'll start off with the first one. This question comes up with a lot of devotees about this verse in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Lord says, "I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness." Well, the question is he talking about specifically remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness of him, or is he talking about material remembrance, forgetfulness, knowledge, like say, like losing your keys or something like that?
Any kind of forgetfulness. If you get where your car keys are, or you know where you left your shoes, or that kind of forgetfulness. Oh, now I remember. That's, you know, material. But remembrance and forgetfulness of Krishna also. He gives.
Hey, thank you. And the other question I have, I guess maybe if you could clarify this sentence of the purport. It says, "There is a dreaming state in which understanding comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead." The way I interpreted that was that Krishna's like giving you some advice in a dream or something like that. But if you could give some clarification.
Could you indicate where you're reading from?
Yeah,
this the context.
This is 7:25, toward the end of the purport.
There's a dreaming state in which understanding comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the phrase?
Yeah.
Well, so using Prabhupada's example, supposing in your dream, you're dreaming that you're a king sitting on a throne. There's no throne, and you're not a king, but the understanding that you're a king sitting on a throne, where does that come from? Comes from Krishna. And you know why that? Well, you know, something in the past. So he does, you know, the understanding that I'm a king sitting on a throne. Or whatever the other past impressions drawn together in the form of a desire, or you know, happiness and distress, or an experience, and then it's like a rerun, like a movie. and rerun, but sometimes spliced together with some other things. It's not exactly a rerun, but it's a rerun. You got it? Yes. Krishna supplies that. Whatever it is that we're understanding within our dream, Krishna supplies that. You have something? Dayata? No. Anyone else? Yes.
Before I came to Krishna consciousness, I heard a description that Om, the symbol Om, corresponds to the states of the states of dreaming, wakefulness, and deep sleep, and the state that's beyond them. Have you
I've never heard
is
that.
There any Vaishnava?
I've never heard that before. It's pranava. Pranava means it's an indication of the supreme. Like the Brahmajyoti, or the light of the sun, is an indication of the sun. So one who addresses Om, they're addressing the Brahmajyoti, or because behind the Brahmajyoti is the source of the Jyoti, the person. Pranava. Panavak sarvavedeshu shabdike purusham rishu. I am. No, in one sense, Krishna is everything. And everything is not Krishna. But Krishna is... That's another subject. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Basically, when we understand that the intelligence is given by Krishna, but sometimes how should I understand that even my mind may be giving some ideas.
Even your mind does what?
Giving some ideas or thoughts. So how should I understand?
Where does a thought within the mind come from?
Okay.
Who's the supplier of everything? Including the thought in your mind. Not you. Nor your mind. Alright?
Yes, Maharaj.
We have a relationship with Supersoul, and he supplies things. You know, like this reference. And sometimes he supplies forgetfulness.
In the context, Maharaj, what I'm trying to understand is, sometimes the mental concoction or thought process, I may assume that it's the intelligence given by Krishna. So how should I differentiate, like, maybe I am fooling myself, or is it truly something coming from Krishna? How should I understand that?
Do you understand his question? That's what you want to know? Something that you just manufactured in your creative imagination is something that Super Soul is directing. That's what you want to know?
Yes, Maharaj.
Well, our one answer is, moment to moment it may be difficult to know. Pretty much we can assume that in our lives there's a mix. Safe assumption? Supersoul is supplying, but supposing somebody is within the modes of nature. I know some people within the modes of nature, do you? Ourselves, for example. So there's a mix. There's devotion and there's the modes of nature that are both operating. So generally speaking, there's a mix. Now, the question is, how much mixed and how much unmixed? Well, start with the assumption there's a mix. Now, when we take those inspirations or whatever, Guru Sadhu Shastra, we hold that up, that inspiration up to the light of Guru Sadhu Shastra. And if there's conformity with Guru Sadhu Shastra, it's more on the side of Supersoul than the modes of nature. And if it's like, it's not at all transparently Guru Sadhu Shastra, it's something else. It's... Now, Super Soul is the supplier of both, right? Because he's the supplier of everything, but not necessarily a direct indication. Here's a practical example that Prabhupada has given. The two examples. The thief. He's sneaking around at night, and he gets this intuitive sense, someone's coming. So he hides behind a tree, and okay, the person's gone. Now, go ahead. That's Super Soul. Or another example, the cat in the kitchen. And the cat is prompted by Super Soul. Wait till the housewife leaves the kitchen. Now jump up on the table and drink the milk. Super Soul. Etc. You know, the venomous serpent that bites. Super Soul. He's got a serpent's body, or cat body, or thief's body, or the intelligence. And, you know, the impressions and the inspirations that come. Super Soul. But then, with the modes of nature. So I understood from your question that, like, it, you know, in moving towards Krishna, what's the best way to move towards Krishna? That's the Guru Sadhu Shastra evaluation.
Why I got this question, Maharaj, is, when I ask a devotee, hey, why are you not coming to the temple? They say that, probably Krishna did not allow me, Krishna did not give me intelligence, you know, kind of reasons, you know, it's not the reality, but then I got the answer, Maharaj, but...
Well, you can smile, or you can grab the stick and hit them, whatever you want to do. You know, practically speaking, there may be obligations, and therefore, because of those obligations, they're not able to come. And that's real. But, you know, to say, oh, Krishna, I'm not chanting until Krishna inspires me to chant. When I feel inspired, then I chant. When Krishna inspires me, then I chant. And Krishna's not inspiring me, so I'm waiting for Krishna to inspire me. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.